Hello, and welcome to the April 2019 InfoTech Threat Landscape Briefing. My name is Jessica Ireland, and I am a director in our Security and Threat Intelligence practice. I will be facilitating today's briefing. During today's discussion, we will cover topics related to cybersecurity, threat actor campaigns, regulatory compliance and legal issues, and threat actor exploits and tactics. Our cybersecurity section covers high-level topics such as threat trends, data breaches, control strategies, and exposure to vulnerabilities that act to broaden your understanding of cybersecurity's impact on your business. Our threat actor campaign section covers topics related to nation-states, cybercriminals, and hacktivists orchestrating campaigns designed to compromise networks and exfiltrate sensitive data. Our regulatory compliance and legal section covers trends in the global regulatory and legal landscape with the potential to impact compliance adherences or disrupt business operations. And lastly, our exploitation and tactics section provides information related to the tools, tactics, and exploits threat actors are leveraging in their attack campaigns. Today's briefing will be supported by myself, research analyst Ian Mulholland, and research specialists Logan Rohde, Michelle Tran, and Mark Mazur. During today's briefing, we will cover the following topics: RSA 2019, All About Trust; the Citrix breach; unintended inferences in a digital world; the gray web; and zero-day exploit discovered in Windows 7 and Chrome. Let's begin. In a space that's usually marked by paranoia and distrust, the 2019 RSA USA conference was surprisingly focused on trust, the real need for it in a world of evolving tech, AI, the Internet of Things, fake news, etc. A rebuilding of trust, if you will. This theme branched off of the conference's overall focus and slogan of better. What does the industry, practitioners, and the tech need to do to better serve customers, users, the world? Rather than promote the idea that we need to be constantly mistrusting, the conference encouraged security professionals to look at solutions around how we prevent the erosion of trust as a result of those aforementioned technologies and concepts. Dame Helen Mirren, yes, that Helen Mirren, called out security professionals as heroes, but solitary ones, and that as we move forward, we need to become, quote, better and stronger together. RSA President Rohit Ghai and cybersecurity strategist entrepreneur Niloufar Razi Howe proposed a dark picture of the future if we continue down the path of hoarding our information, allowing for misinformation, among other things. This would further promote the idea that we need to stay solitary. But they suggested that to change the path, it is possible that risk and trust could coexist in the future of cybersecurity. Around the idea of trust, Guy suggested the idea of trustworthy twins, humans and machines cooperating, which makes them more trustworthy than either is individually, to quote Sarah Peters' recap of the talk for Dark Reading. Humans and technology can be a check on each other. AI has the high performance, whereas humans are better at being creative. The example of that cooperation Peters outlined was humans asking questions and machines hunting for answers. Guy and Howe also discussed the idea of a chain of trust or reputation bank account that would keep an ongoing record of an organization's positive and negative actions. For example, if an organization neglected to mention a breach until way after the fact. This could help promote an ongoing focus on trust in this industry. In regards to artificial intelligence, a technology lacking in empathy and other more human attributes, it also turns out it's one that is, quote, easily tricked. McAfee CTO Steve Grobman and chief data scientist Dr. Celeste Frolic warned about AI's limitations, such as being easily tricked, and that using this technology still requires a critical analysis approach. As we know, technology doesn't understand morality, said Grobman. Then finally, in the ever-expanding space of IoT, there are real concerns now and for the future about the interconnectedness of these devices. Matt Wachitsky, VP of Global Threat Intelligence Group at Cisco Talos, highlighted the current concern of the reality that these devices aren't running proprietary protocols. In his words, they're running on IP. We're talking traffic meters, stoplights, all connected to our IP world, where previously they were not. The technologies we're building in IoT are bleeding into our IT world. Eventually, they will bleed into the operational technology world of critical infrastructure and how we deliver water and power. And we're going to have to learn the completely new world of OT technology. The hope out of all of this, as Rohit Ghai said, is that looking back at this year of RSA, folks would say that this was the year that 40,000 cyber practitioners had an epiphany and began to obsess about the trust landscape that paved the way forward. So, moving into 2019, what are you doing to think about the trust landscape rather than the threat landscape? It's probably a question we should be asking ourselves as well.
In early March, the FBI notified Citrix that cyber actors had gained access into their internal network. Stan Black, Citrix's Chief Security and Information Officer, has assured his clients that there is no indication that the security of any Citrix product or service was compromised. However, the security firm Reef Security has assessed the incident and stated that at least 6 terabytes of sensitive data stored on the enterprise network, including email correspondence, files and network shares, and other services used for project management and procurement, were accessed by the Iranian group Iridium. According to Reef Security, threat actors bypassed two-factor authentication for critical applications and services for further unauthorized access to VPN and single sign-on. In addition, the FBI believe that the group used password spraying, a technique that involves entering commonly used passwords with several user accounts to uncover weak passwords, avoid password lockouts, and ultimately gain access to the network. What can we take away from the Citrix breach? Well, if the FBI are correct in believing that password spraying was involved in the attack, a good start to preventing instances like these are to implement a strong password policy and socialize it into your organization. Additionally, auditing user passwords against common password lists and considering two-factor or multi-factor authentication are things to consider.
True anonymity has always been something that is difficult to achieve. If somebody has the proper knowledge, technology, and period of time, the anonymity could be broken. In the classroom, students are often asked to submit written work anonymously. If written using a pencil or pen, a teacher who is familiar with their students' handwriting could identify the authors of some submissions. If written using a computer, certain factors, like the time of submission and the language patterns observed in the text, could be used to identify the author. Let's take this one step further. Let's say playing cards are collected from players anonymously. In other words, the dealer closes his eyes until all playing cards have been placed in front of him. Under normal circumstances, this would be a sufficient method for keeping the previous owners of the cards anonymous. However, if the dealer wanted to and had the right resources and skill, could locate fingerprints on the card and identify the original card owners. The act of leaving a fingerprint on a playing card is being called an unintended inference. You provided some data, the playing card, but unintentionally also provided a way for others to learn more about you. In this example, having the player's fingerprint could allow the dealer to learn about their criminal record. These unintended inferences are becoming a real-world problem as machine learning techniques become more common. People are providing data to organizations, and these organizations are requesting and receiving consent to process this data. When processing is done by machine learning algorithms, it becomes next to impossible to predict all of the inferences that may be created as a result. This increases the risk to data subjects in the event of a data breach, for the inferences that can be made about the data that is stolen is largely unpredictable. For example, Carnegie Mellon researchers Alessandro Acquisti and Ralph Gross observed a correlation between people's date of birth and their social security numbers. Therefore, an algorithm processing date of birth information could make predictions about social security numbers. Unintended inferences are not limited to identity. It's possible that these algorithms could make incorrect inferences that could result in harm or incorrect assumptions down the road. In other words, conclusions drawn from these algorithms could be incorrect, but unverifiable. Privacy regulations like the GDPR are working to put more human checkpoints into these automated processes to help protect against these inferences. More information on this is provided in the Matthias Advocates link on the current slide. In the future, we are going to see the pendulum swing between organizations' desire to understand the value of collected data and the threat of unintended inferences until a balance can be found. Privacy and cybersecurity will be working more together going forward. According to CPO of ImUtah, Andrew Burt, a quote captured by Tech Republic, "From a practical perspective, this means legal and privacy personnel will become more technical, and technical personnel will become more familiar with legal and compliance mandates, end quote.
Recently, hackers have adapted their tactics by taking a page from out of the playbook of the best magic acts. Just as magicians use misdirection to pull off illusions so that the trick remains hidden while in plain sight, so too are hackers using the web's basic rules of identity and access management to maintain anonymity while finding new opportunities for illegal or illicit practices on the surface web. Speaking at this year's RSA conference in San Francisco, Angel Grant, Director of Identity, Fraud, and Risk Intelligence with IT security technology firm RSA, stated that we should be less concerned with the dark web and more concerned about what she calls the gray web. Whereas plenty of attention has been paid to the dark web, a part of the internet inaccessible to search engines that requires the use of an anonymizing browser called Tor, the gray web is significantly different. This is because the gray web is not necessarily a place, like one of many sites accessed on the surface or dark web, but rather a set of new practices that leverage the surface web to carry out attacks. In the same way that ink stains and transforms surfaces that it comes into contact with, the gray web can also be said to stain the surface web with the aims and goals of the dark web. For instance, whereas the rules of identity and access management on the surface web are based on the assumption that usernames and passwords are used by the people they belong to, the increased practice of credential and identity theft carried out by hackers has transformed the surface web's clear rules into gray waters. This is because stolen identities and credentials that would be used for legitimate purposes on the surface web have been compromised to allow attackers a new level of access and mobility to privileged information behind paywalls, private networks, and net banking. Take credential stuffing, for example, a practice by which hackers obtain vast amounts of credentials such as usernames and passwords, and then repeatedly input these into websites across the net. Online retailers are taking one of the biggest hits due to this practice, where some sites have described that more than 90% of their login traffic comes from these types of attacks. Airline and consumer banking industries are also under siege, with about 60% of login attempts coming from criminals. While not all of these attacks are successful, this type of fraud costs the e-commerce sector about $6 billion a year, while consumer banking loses nearly $1.7 billion a year. And where are these cyber criminals getting all of these credentials? According to Grant, after having done social profiles of cyber criminals, over 500 criminal organizations were discovered to be selling and advertising on social media sites using specific keyword searches to hide in plain sight on the surface web. Credit cards and CVV codes, credentials like account usernames and password combinations, botnets, as well as tutorials and techniques for running DDoS attacks are commonly found on the surface web, just to name a few. Last year, between October 4th and 14th, less than 1% of HSBC's online banking customers were breached by unauthorized users. Customer information that may have been accessed includes full names, mailing addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, dates of birth, account numbers, account types, balances, transaction history, payee account information, and statement history. The breach may have been a result of credential stuffing, and HSBC has updated its security for logging on and authentication processes for digital and mobile access to all personal and business accounts. These security measures require further steps for authorizing who is accessing these accounts to combat these large-scale stuffing attacks. What are some common recommendations then to prevent these types of attacks from happening? At the individual level, it is recommended that users not use the same account username and password for all of their accounts. Most users still reuse the same password across multiple accounts, so having individual login information for separate accounts reduces vulnerabilities. At the organizational level, Grant suggests that organizations have a cross-channel or omni-channel fraud strategy that correlates all channels that users can engage with, be it mobile, branch, online, etc., and to use behavioral analytics to spot when and where any anomalies appear to pop up. For more information from InfoTech, go to our website and check out our research on how to build a security strategy. Or, if you want help determining how to optimize your SIM using behavioral analytics, go to our software reviews for a high-level overview of the current market of SIM technology.
Are you still running Windows 7 on your machines? Well, there's some important news you ought to be aware of. On February 27th, Google discovered zero-day vulnerabilities in Windows 7 and their own Chrome browser that could be exploited together to gain control of systems running Windows 7 and perhaps older versions of Windows 2. Google released a patch to correct the issue 2 days later on March 1st, but it wasn't until a March 7th blog post that Google announced the issue publicly, noting that the then recently issued update was to close a zero-day vulnerability and that a corresponding issue existed in the Windows 7 code. They reported the issue to Microsoft, who confirmed that they were aware of the issue and were working on a fix. However, Microsoft was quite a bit slower than Google to issue a patch, which was not released until March 12th, almost 2 weeks after Google's notification. What's more, Microsoft issued a patch for a second Windows 7 zero-day vulnerability at the same time. In light of all this, all signs point to a growing need to discontinue use of Windows 7. If you are still using it, be sure to download the new patches and any others available, but know that the operating system is now on life support. Even Microsoft is getting out of the Windows 7 game and plans to fully end support for it on January 14th, 2020. Until then, Windows 7 users have the option of purchasing extended security updates from Microsoft, which are available as of April 1st. Yet all Windows 7 users are being urged to upgrade to Windows 10, and as an incentive to do so, the price of the extended security updates will increase each year until service is discontinued entirely in 2020. For more help modernizing your systems and security program, have a look at these great InfoTech resources on Windows 10 migration and vulnerability management.
This concludes our monthly threat briefing. If you have any questions or need any support, please do not hesitate to contact us to set up an analyst call. Thank you and take care.